Welcome back to another episode of Tech and Law Insights. This is episode number 7, and I'm your host, Rupa, co-founder at Lurie. Additionally, welcome to the sub-podcast episode number 3, Legal Tech Leaders, where we explore purpose-driven leaders on the cutting edge of technology and law who are majorly impacting business and society today. I'm thrilled to be joined by a remarkable guest today, Anne Marie Penny, whose career spans the worlds of being a founder, being in venture capital, and AI-driven workforce innovation. Anne-Marie is a...
Sorry about that. See? Look at us go.
No, that's my bad. You can say your piece.
Oh, I'm just used to, I thought there was a pause there because I can sit until you're ready for me to speak.
Okay, let's do this. Let me say this blurb about you, but you're right, it is a bit awkward. So Joe will edit out this part.
Perfect. Or keep it in because it's funny.
Yeah, maybe he can make it that way. So Anne Marie is the founder and CEO of Dreamore, a recruiting and advisory firm dedicated to bringing humanity back to hiring and future-proofing companies and careers. Her impressive career includes being ranked by Forbes as one of America's best professional recruiting firms, and she's been nominated for a Lifetime Achievement Award by the LA Business Journal. Anne Marie is also a limited partner in a cryptocurrency fund, a real estate investor, and an angel investor who particularly focuses on women and diversity-led ventures. Anne Marie, thank you so much for joining us today as our speaker.
Hello, I'm really glad to be here. Thanks so much for the opportunity to talk on this platform and help others like me.
Anne Marie, I'm so excited to have you, and I'd love to dive right into your experience and insights. Your career has taken you from leading Apex Direct Search to founding Dreamore after experiencing a personal setback in the Woolsey fire. I just wanted to ask you more about how that experience shaped your approach to business and your vision for Dreamore.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but I just want to say that, you know, there's trauma energy around this story. And so I don't want anybody to be uncomfortable, particularly right after the Woolsey fire. I would say, well, I'm grateful for the fire. You know, my house burned to the ground and that would stop people. And I realized, first of all, you know, we all have trauma experiences. And so being empathetic to others and recognizing pain that we might have experienced and where we are on our healing journey, that's really important. And, you know, I was in a zone where I was kind of glossing over. So I definitely learned that, you know, healing is like a vine. It doesn't grow in a straight line and it's going to twist and curve. And that's just embracing it. Apex Direct Search, we were the first recruiting firm in Los Angeles to focus on .coms before anybody really knew what that was. So since the 90s, before possibly some of my listeners were born, we have been building tech startups from the very, very early stage, and some of them ending up as unicorns or going IPO or being acquired by, you know, companies like Google and Apple. So that was really my first entrepreneurial adventure. And I actually broke up a partnership with a mentor that I really treasured because I was so committed to leaving Fortune 500 and being in the startup universe. So 30 years of that perspective has just been really amazing. By the time that the Woolsey fire came in 2018, you know, I came here with $200 and a place to sleep. And through hard work and relationships, you know, I built up to all of these awards and accolades. You know, 1%, you know, bump in the grocery store and the Lady Gaga, and, you know, my husband had a plane, you know, all that stuff. And so I thought that my story at that point was this concept of, you know, living your dream and starting with very little and then, you know, getting all the way to the quote top. But then this fire happened and I realized all of this hyper productivity, it was very much born not of wanting to be number one and being competitive, but it was a sense of scarcity mentality on a really profound level. And I find that a lot of founders, if you really look in your soul and you think, oh, I'm doing this because it's competitive, you know, sometimes you're doing it because you're just scared you're going to run out and you don't know how to stop. But that was my personal journey. And I shut down everything in 2019 to just focus on healing. and to embrace this idea that not only did I have enough, but it was the relationships with people that was the true currency. After that fire, I had so many people that the place meant a lot to, the business relationships and the friendships meant a lot, and they were all reaching out to help me. And, you know, no matter how many unicorns you build and how many planes you own, if you're going to be that bougie, you know, it doesn't mean anything if you don't have these authentic relationships. So fast forward a little bit, I was a reluctant founder, but somewhere in the energy, people said, can you please relaunch your company so that we can do business with you again? And I wanted to have a different name than before because I felt like Apex Direct Search had burned in the fire. And, you know, I was ready to look ahead instead of behind. Dream More is a women, diversity, and purpose-led firm. And so that name is also meaningful because even though we had spent most of the career building tech startups, I wanted to broaden it out and particularly emphasize that, you know, we don't want to just build a bunch of tech industry elite. We want to be able to intentionally build companies that are doing something good for our planet and each other, and also, you know, uplifting those that may have had some limits in our industry. You know, that's who we are, and that's really who we want to keep helping.
That really resonates with me as a founder, what you mentioned about scarcity. And you always emphasize bringing humanity back to hiring as a core mission of yours.
Very. So here we are, and there's two points on that. First of all, we've always been a targeted search firm, very much about, you know, like an executive search firm, but bringing the same white glove service to any level and any function in the organization. And so you almost don't know that we're doing our jobs if you don't know that, you know, we're doing our jobs, because we're not out there posting on Indeed. We're not advertising. We're really being targeted and relationship oriented. Now, that's how I was trained and mentored. And, you know, every cycle or so as technology grew, there would be, you know, all of this buzz on LinkedIn and other platforms. Oh, there's a new way to do recruiting, and it's authentic relationships. And you, those of us that were the OG crew were like, no, it's always been that. And interesting that you would say that. So here we are today in an era where, you know, in a post-pandemic world, we're working more globally, we're more remote and isolated. AI, of course, I don't see that as the enemy. I think AI is the opportunity for us to restore our authentic humanity, because we've ended up doing so many mundane tasks that we don't need to do and isn't what our brains were formed to do, that, you know, let's have machines do things that machines are really good at, so we can be creative and empathetic and have feelings and have experiences. This is what makes us a person. And bringing humanity back to hiring was very much a response to not only acknowledging how we've always been and how we feel the recruiting industry always should be, but also acknowledging that, you know, all of these AI tools and automations and, you know, the stage of technology development that we're at right now, which is not fully formed. It's like the early .com era. I started my company when the internet was so new, we didn't even have the imagination for things like telemedicine or streaming or, you know, Zoom meetings. And so running it through a similar lens with AI, it's like, well, no wonder we're disappointed in the results, because it's like a baby right now. And, you know, it's got a long ways to go, and our human experiences to shape that future.
And you really position Dream More and your work as bringing humans and the current state of technology, so baby agents, baby AI together. And I know on a personal note, I know you have been using AI tools to build software yourself and websites. So specifically with recruiting, how do you see AI and adopting AI transforming recruiting and talent acquisition in the next 5 years specifically? And if you could also speak specifically to the legal domain for our audience, that would be excellent.
Absolutely. I mean, I like to kind of do a big picture and then, you know, shrink down into it. It's like when you're in a, you know, investment kind of thing, and it's like, what's the TAM? And then you position your startup within that much broader universe. So in the broader universe, Besides this notion that, you know, AI as a technology is still new and forming, it's also, you know, we've got a lot of very negative and harsh rhetoric around ethics and dystopia. And, you know, we're going to be reporting to robots and it's going to take our jobs. And so as much as on the one hand, you could say, well, these are some possibilities, but it's really not the full potential. You know, everything around emerging technology and AI in particular is what we put under this broader umbrella called the future of work. And in some circumstances, the future of work is just really focused on HR tech, right? Like here are AI tools that will, you know, video interview candidates or, you know, compare keywords to a job description and that kind of thing. That's a very small subset of this broader vision, which is, you know, what is our relationship with work? How are companies formed, particularly in the startup world? That is actually pretty exciting that you could have a much, much smaller team of people and much lower level of investment or even self-investing to be able to create a company that, you know, was a seven-figure company. And we couldn't do that before. And so in that context, well, then what does it mean to work? What do careers look like? There are some statistics that, you know, at least 30% of white collar jobs as they exist today will be gone in the next 5 years. And so, you know, what happens to people that learned some software engineering, but the kind of software engineering they're doing is replaceable. So these are complex and heady themes. And for the sake of a, you know, not a 3 hour podcast, I'll sort of gloss over. But, you know, somewhere the through line is this is very much our well-informed, strong opinions around where AI is and is going as we see it and the possibility. First of all, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes, much less longer. So embracing this idea that the future of work, all are affecting the future of work. And if we sit back and allow this dystopian and elitist conversation to, you know, train these LLMs and then have avoidance behavior, well, sure, it might not be the same positive outlook that it could be. But if we lean into it and recognize there's things that machines can do that, like, trust me, my friends that hate math, they're all excited because I'm like, you don't have to worry about math. Oh my God, I'm finally arrived.
Yeah, we've been waiting for this for years.
Oh my God, seriously. It's like I've given a gift to people saying that, you know, as we are developing this and, you know, it can take these mundane tasks that, you know, an inbox was, these are all things that are kind of made up, right? An inbox did not exist 40 years ago. And right. Most of us haven't been alive for 40 years, so it's a less, you know, normal perspective to zoom way back and be like, well, what were humans doing 100 years ago or hundreds of years ago? So our brains haven't really changed that much, and it's just a good lens to run through that, you know, we have experiences and stories, we have connection, we have feelings, we have imagination, and even when the tools that exist today can kind of pretend to be that and sometimes fake us out a little bit, they're still not actually doing that. You know, there's math and science underneath it and not this fully formed, you know, humanity with a sense of purpose and meaning that we lose a lot of that when we're too immersed in these things that aren't really, you know, interacting in the ways that we are formed. I mean, I wear computer glasses. I don't wear computer glasses when I'm out in the world, like, because my human brain is like meant for the garden and looking at the sky.
Yeah.
So you mentioned ethics and the law. And so it does very much relate to, you know, fear being the mind killer. And a lot of the rhetoric right now is that this is a big, scary thing that's going to take over. And, you know, it's like, you know, the AI has no feelings. It also has no morality or ethical code. And so the opportunity and the impetus with our humanity is like, well, we're the ones that choose those things and teach others and motivate others and inspire others. So it's just like, you know, we're Americans here. Like it's your privilege and your responsibility to vote, right? Regardless of your politics, that is a thing that is both a privilege and a responsibility in this country. I would make an analogy that it is your privilege and your responsibility to interact with AI and learn these tools and recognize it's not a piece of software code. It is, you know, language that is learning a completely different kind of thing. And if it's a toddler right now and, you know, the only people teaching it are, you know, not giving it any love and then, you know, kind of mad at it when it disappoints them. Mm-hmm. Well, that toddler's got to be a really awful human being. So let's bring in the feminine energy, regardless of your gender, you know, this warmth and this nurturing and, you know, these ethics and all of that that we can put into it. And that will actually elevate it and create a more positive outcome.
I really love how you brought up this like negative rhetoric surrounding hiring and AI. And there is no replacement for the kind of training that we as experts or thought leaders can give to this piece of technology. And you're absolutely right to kind of spin that rhetoric around and give it this analogy of this is an amazing piece of technology that can help us, that can learn from us, and we can actually make that technology succeed if we're all committed to kind of using it properly.
Absolutely. You know, it feels strange and different, even though it has been technology that's been around for a long time. I'm a gardener, and so I'm going to use a nature metaphor because somewhere in this thing that feels like very other and cold and dystopian, you know, even terms like master prompt engineering, like these terms were brought to you by not the marketing department, right? Because like master prompt engineering is actually more like, imagine you're having a really fun conversation over dinner with your smart friend and you're learning from each other. That is more what the experience is like when you're interacting. And that fires you. It's like being in the writer's room. You know, my girlfriend's a TV producer, a very creative, and I've been showing her some things lately and I see her face light up. She's like, oh, they've been telling people in the entertainment industry that this is going to take our jobs. And now I'm sitting here having an actual experience with you. And I'm just like all excited about all these different ideas I have in my head that I'm able to talk to this thing and then, you know, see an output that is making me even more creative in my vibes.
It's
the opposite, but it's still very new. I want to ensure, and by the way, I abandoned the garden metaphor, so don't worry about that. We'll talk about AI as AI. You know, the reality is, like, I wish it was as good as people are scaring people that it is. We're just not there yet. So everybody can calm down for a minute and be like, it is not going to take your job unless your job is so boring and mundane that, you know, you shouldn't be doing that job anyway. You're better than that. But we are all learning together, and avoidance is not the cure. So if the one thing that anybody gets out of this is recognize your fear, don't believe the hype, and then just like jump in. And this is why we're about to launch the Liberation Learning Platform, which we are bringing to anybody who has an open mind and integrity. And you don't need to understand code. You probably, if you're bad at math, you can be good at math. Like, we'll accept you as well. But if math isn't your thing and science isn't your thing, and you just like to have conversations, then you're our people. And we want to create this in a way that it feels good and you want to do it. And then every energy that you're putting into this is going to make it a more positive place for us all.
That is so wonderful. The deeper I've gotten into prompt engineering, the more I found out that the more specific I can be and talking with AI about very specific topics, the more I can feel purposeful and impactful and come out walking with that creative spirit. And I'm wondering if you could share actually a little bit more about the platform you're launching for our listeners.
Yes. And, you know, maybe by the time this is published, we'll be able to, you know, share the link and then people can experience it for themselves. Yeah. You know, learning is a whole category of things, right? You're, you know, getting your JD, and, you know, there's probably a lot of students out there. And so learning that feels like traffic school, where you're going to read this thing that you don't want to read, and then there's a quiz at the end, and then you literally put it in short-term memory, and then you're just trying to get it over with. That is the opposite of what we're creating. We are looking at, you know, if we channel back to, you know, what makes us authentically human. And a lot of this, you can look at, well, what were we like as little kids before all this other stuff got layered on? And how do we just naturally interact with our world? Well, you know, we're going to go out and touch things and experience things. And, you know, we're not so scared. We're curious. And it's this concept of continuous learning and curiosity. Certainly that is something that informs anybody who's an entrepreneur and founder. Like, if you don't have even a shred of that, you're probably not going to launch a company, right? And if you let fear overwhelm you, then you're probably not going to launch a company either, because, you know, that can really paralyze you. But this personality type, which I think, oversimplified, we all have as tiny little kids, and then stuff happens and then we kind of lose it along the way. But that is where, you know, we are tapping into with the Liberation Learning Platform. You know, there's a point system, there's different choices. It's like an adventure game where you're like, hey, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? Do you feel this way or do you feel that way? And so there's a lot of reward systems, and there's nothing that feels like read this paragraph and now learn and do this thing, and then you're going to be quizzed on it. Because it's just, we've seen that that gives people, you know, fear energy, and it doesn't stick as much. I'm a mentor for a lot of younger people, but I was a youngest child, right? So I have this like older, younger person energy. And anybody who's mentored others recognizes you can tell people all day long what to do, and they ask for that and they listen. There is no substitute from your direct human experience of something. Like, everybody touches a hot stove at some point or something hot and burns themselves. We've all done that. And then you're like, oh yeah, don't touch the hot things. It has to be internalized. So that is what the Liberation Learning Platform is tapping into. It's great for anyone who is neurodivergent. We've been very, you know, purposeful about accessibility and inclusion of all types. And you don't have to speak a certain language or be educated to a certain level. The reason we call it liberation is because there's just too much stuff out there right now in the business world that is 10x your career, 10x your business, go to market. You know, we're gonna give you a B round of investment if your model looks like this. And I have helped build that industry, and I'm not disparaging it entirely, but I am a person who graduated and was a teenager when Microsoft Excel was launched. I know, back in the days that we rode a horse and buggy. So since I was a teenager though, and then building so many SaaS companies over the years and e-commerce and all that, like, there's been a repeated commentary that we are going to do this thing that is going to make your time more efficient, streamline and automate, and then you're gonna have all this extra time. And a lot of the AI tools right now are feeling similar in the language. Like, we're gonna do this automation and give you your time back so you can produce more things. Like, when do we ever get that time back? When can we ever calm down and just be and have dinner with our families or go outside? And so it is, from a soul level, we call this liberation learning as a way to reflect our values, that we can't just keep treating humanity like we are more machines on top of machines, pushing buttons, texting all day, you know, doing our 10,000 steps. Like, let's go the other direction and let's find our freedom and our purpose in that.
Thank you so much for that. You mentioned finding your why in some of your posts as a way to overcome feeling stuck. And I myself am, like, sign me up for Liberation Learning. I think I have been looking to the Gallup poll for strengths and weaknesses, and just trying to, after reading some of your posts as well, could you share and elaborate on finding your own why? I mean, you've talked a lot about it today, but how you evolve finding your why throughout your challenges, and any advice you could give to entrepreneurs who also want to build purpose-driven businesses?
Absolutely. So I'm going to answer it in two different but supporting directions. Life is full of choices, and the only mistake is to not choose. And so finding your why, you know, sometimes just pick something and just decide that's what it is. like my company is called Dreammore, and I chose that name in the first year of the pandemic, where I was so sad and so traumatized by fire, and there were riots, and there was just a lot. Living in a town like Los Angeles, and I was in the heart of the city, like they would shoot fireworks off in the middle of the night. So I was basically sleep deprived for 3 months, and it just made me really sad and loopy in ways that I had never imagined I was capable. Mm-hmm. And in that dark place, I realized I had lost my purpose, because I was literally just like having a pizza, you know, being on Twitch and just waiting for it to be over. And I didn't even have vacation to look forward. So what is it like with little kids? You're like, ooh, I'm excited for my birthday or summer vacation. And so I just was totally arbitrary. I was like, you know, I need a purpose. So I have this 10 acres of land to develop. I should relaunch my company. I'm going to call everything Dreammore. Even if it doesn't make sense to other people, it makes sense to me. And I'm just going to decide that that is my purpose. And then everything that I do, if I was pulling weeds in the garden, I was like, yes, I'm developing land. If I was meeting somebody for coffee to talk about startups, I was like, yes, that is towards this purpose. No matter what I did, if I went to the grocery store and bought rotisserie chicken, I was like, that is because I am doing this thing called Dreammore. And it was magic. I got motivated. I had a reason to be. I stopped watching videos so much. I lost weight. Like, it was just magic. But literally all I did was just like, I got to pick something. I'll just make that it. So choosing anything is better than choosing nothing, because all you're trying to do is get on a path and get in motion again. You know, that's like a sciencey thing, right? It's inertia. Just like get in motion. And then that will inform the next step and the next step and the next step. Also a sense of self. I think this comes with age and experience, and admittedly trauma, is just being willing to be just like brutally honest with yourself, even the ugly parts. That will inform your why.
Anne-Marie, thank you so much for sharing your remarkable insights and with us today. I'm honestly blown away, and I will definitely be re-listening to this podcast, because your perspective spanning the future of work, AI, venture capital, and purpose-driven business provides an invaluable window for me and to others into how all of these forces are reshaping work as we know it.
I'm glad to help.
I certainly hope to have you back on a future episode, Anne-Marie.
I would love to be here. It's been a privilege and an honor.
I know AI and the law will be changing rapidly, so stay tuned, listeners, for our next episode of Tech and Law Insights and sub-podcast episode number 3, Legal Tech Leaders with Anne-Marie Penny. I am your host, Rupa, and until next time, let's continue to explore the intersection of technology, law, and business.